Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
All right, everybody, it is episode 262. It's Sunday morning, Top Rope Nation. The trio is once again complete. We're here to talk about SummerSlam 2022. I didn't know if I was going to be on this show. When I think about dedication, I got to think about yesterday and me running a one-year-old's birthday party. Justin Joint was in the house. He came over for a while. It was a good time, but as any of you out there with children know, setting up a kid's birthday party is a lot of work. I was cleaning up until about 9:30 at night. Then I started SummerSlam. I watched the whole show except three matches last night. Got up this morning, watched the remaining three I needed to see so that I could be on this podcast for the big return of Kyle Ross. Because Kyle has not been on a show with Justin and I together since June 27th. In fact, it was the Forbidden Door review. It was the last time all three of us were on the same pod.
Oh,
I didn't want to miss it. Kyle, you've produced some content for us since you've returned from the West. You did some Top Rope Nation Extra. Patrons can check that out. I posted a segment of it on our main feed for everybody on Friday. But Kyle, I mean, you had quite the journey out West. I mean, you're kind of our own personal cowboy now. You know, it didn't matter if you were out in the Dakotas, maybe like retracing.
Oh, here we go.
Of Theodore Roosevelt. For those one of you live on our video stream, you're seeing some photos right now.
One of the three presidents I've given an A grade to. Longtime listeners maybe remember that discussion.
Kyle, you know, out in the Dakotas, retracing the steps of Teddy Roosevelt. Whether he was in Minnesota, retracing the steps of Hangman Page and his path to AEW victory, or whether he was in Iowa, as the Top Rope Nation crew hung out at my house on your way home back to Ohio, Kyle.
Oh, look at that.
It was
photo.
A good time. It was a good time. But all in all, Kyle, welcome back to Top Rope Nation, Mr. Madcap Ross.
Oh, boy. Here we go. I like that one picture where I'm like completely hammered. Obviously, I sent it to you where I'm like, ooh, like that. Or that's like, it's like that Samoa Joe photo they showed when he was making fun of Jeff Hardy. It was a meme for a while on Twitter when he's like, remember that one?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. There was no way I could miss. I mean, you guys could have done the show without me. There wouldn't have been a video stream. There would have just been audio. But I mean, look, it's the second biggest WWE show of the year. I wanted to be on here with both of you to talk about it. So I put in the work so I could chat with you on this Sunday morning. And I hope you enjoyed that. Welcome back, Kyle.
I just hope you feel the same way in 75 minutes.
Yeah, we'll see.
Or I wondered if you were second-guessing your life decisions this morning watching those three last matches.
Well, no, you know what was weird is I, as you guys know from the Facebook group, I watched the main event live. That was when I finally got done cleaning up the house with my wife. And then I rewound the live feed, and I could only get back to the McAfee match. And then I watched from McAfee up until the semi-main. Then they had the replay posted. So I watched Becky and Bianca last night. And then the three matches after that I watched this morning to get ready. So that is what we did. Justin, like I said, I saw you yesterday. Thank you for coming to the party, my friend. How are you doing this morning?
I am doing pretty good. I'm wearing my sunglasses because the McMahon-Helmsley era is here. And the boy, the future sure is bright for the WWE.
Yes, yeah, a whole new sea change in WWE, as we're going to talk about here.
You didn't tell me Dave Shearer was joining us on the program this morning.
Yeah. So, hey, guys, again, welcome. It's episode 262 of Top Rope Nation.
How much money did they give Dave Shearer when he visited the Performance Center that one time? Has anyone ever confirmed that?
I had an invite to the Performance Center at one time. I don't think I've ever told you guys that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, open invite, PR told me. Anytime you're in town, we'll give you a private tour. Come check it out. Haven't been to Florida since then, though, so I haven't been able to take them up on it. But as you are seeing right now, I'd like to give these guys a private tour of the Performance Center. They deserve it. There are amazing patrons of Top Rope Nation. You see their names going across the bottom of the screen. As I said, Kyle dropped a bonus show for them on Friday. This week, Top Rope Nation Classics coming out, reviewing Canadian Stampede 97. Going to be a lot of fun. So if you want to hear that, it's going to be over 2 hours, I'm sure. Join the Patreon page, and over 80 bonus podcasts available right now. Link in the description. And as always, if you want to support the show in a free way, subscribe to our YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast feeds wherever podcasts are found. Boys, it's time. Give me your grades. SummerSlam 2022. Just enjoy it. You can go first. What do you give the show?
I gotta say, for the most part, except for maybe towards the middle and the end, I was mostly entertained by this show. It didn't feel like a complete waste of time. However, when you kind of zoom back and look at it, I'm sure we will talk about what, you know, the big questions coming into this show were, was, you know, is this actually a new era? I will say that this was an 8-match card with 3 part-timers and Dom Mysterio coming out as winners. So I don't think a whole lot has changed. I am going to go a C+.
C+. Okay. Kyle.
Give us your grade. I'm going to steal that grade. I'm looking off Justin's paper here, I guess. It was a better than average WWE show. I don't know where it would fall on the spectrum of all-time SummerSlams. Certainly not near the top, but certainly not near the bottom. I think the one thing, and this is going to be a key talking point for me throughout this podcast, that this show had going for it, and that maybe Triple H has going for him moving forward as he takes over creative, is there was nothing on this show that was flagrantly dumb. And if he can avoid that, because remember, you know, there was a tweet about the podcast Liam and I did, like, oh, I can't believe you're not more optimistic about it. It should just be better by, like, you know, just because it has to be. It can't get any worse. And, you know, it's kind of a backhanded compliment, but if Triple H can just, like, avoid stupidity, he's probably, and just keeps doing the same WWE playbook that the fan base right now seems to be eating up, he's probably in good shape, I guess, to a degree. I mean, I still don't think the things that people loved in NXT 1.0 that he did, he will necessarily try to do that much on the main roster or have a great chance of succeeding. But just simply by not doing dumb stuff, I guess he's okay.
It's like he bought a house and the only thing to improve the yard is he just has to pick up the dog shit that was littered around it from the previous owner.
That is certainly a way to put it. Yes. The other thing is, I had this fucking point, damn it. And then I was thinking about the dog shit I have to pick up in my yard right now. And he's throwing it for a loop, Justin. So Ryan, why don't you give a grade? Then it'll come back to me.
All right. I'm going to go a little bit higher. I'll go B-. I'd say even though I watched it in segments, maybe that helps that I didn't have to sit through it straight through, you know, because I did watch it piece by piece. I mean, the main event, it was a spectacle. We'll talk about it. It wasn't like a great wrestling match, but it was a good spectacle. It was memorable in that way. I thought the opener was very good. I agree with Justin. The middle settled down quite a bit. And, you know, that was kind of after the main event, what I watched next last night. But then when I got to Becky and Bianca, then I really liked that match. So, yeah, I got to go B-. I like that it was only 8 matches, that it wasn't a 10 or 11 match show. So in that way, that was a positive for me. We always talk about how these WWE cards are way too long. So, yeah, I'll go B-.
I still thought this show was too long. I was getting tired by the main event. And it's interesting you talked about how you came into the main event fresh. And I wonder if that would help to watch. Because, I didn't think that match got off to an inspiring start before the tractor and Rock tipped over the ring. Like, I was kind of in a coma at that point. We'll talk about it when we get there. But the point I was going to come back to before, I looked out the window and stared at Bruno's shit was.
That's the dog, not San Martino.
Not San Martino. What's that kid's movie that everyone loves? Encanto.
Oh,
Encanto. Our dog named Bruno. But comparing it to last year. So on that Patreon show that I did with Liam, and we were talking about SummerSlam history, I was a little surprised how last year's SummerSlam had the lowest rating on Cage Match. And he and I talked about it, and we talked about it in the watch-along when we were doing SmackDown the other night. And I think the consensus is the reason everyone hates last year was because of the Bianca-Becky thing, right?
Yeah.
Well, it goes back to now my original point. If Triple H can strip away those talking points or those, like, those happenings that become, like, universally hated and sort of overwhelm all the good or what good there is on these WWE shows, again, he's probably in good shape, and there wasn't anything like that last night.
So what'd you go for grade?
C+.
C+? Okay, C+, C+, B-. Let's look at where our listeners and followers were over on the Top Rope Nation Twitter account. So this is one of the most positive responses we've gotten for a WWE show in quite some time. As you see there, 157 votes strong. Almost 55% gave it an A, about 30% a B. So like 85% of the respondents were A or B. 10% gave it a C. 5% DRF. I could in no way argue that this was a DRF show. It was not that bad. Yeah.
And that actually lines up with what I've seen on, you know, it had a pretty positive response on social media. A lot of people really enjoyed this show. A lot of my enjoyment came from superficial stuff. Like, you know, I'm always a sucker for, you know, the outdoor stadium, you know, open air, daylight matches, you know, that kind of stuff. Being able to watch it with our Facebook group in that thread is always a blast, especially it seems to be even better when the show is bad. It makes it even all that more entertaining to chat along with everybody. So I think that played a big part in it.
Not to be a dick, that poll is silly. That result, I mean, come on, stop it. The show is not an A. I mean, if that was an A show, folks, my God. I mean, there are some shows that I think, like, yeah, I mean, would be, what grade would you give it? Some of these, life-changing? I mean, is that an option, I guess, for things? I mean, come on. I've seen a lot better wrestling shows. I've seen better wrestling shows than WWE. What's interesting is, and I guess this poll supports it, because I don't remember what our Money in the Bank poll said, and I was really low on that one.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to the crowd, but this was definitely better than Money in the Bank. But what's interesting about this show is, and I wonder if you guys would concur, to me it seemed that the sum was greater than any of the individual parts.
Yes.
Right? Like there was, because we were talking about this morning on Facebook, the chat kept going. People were like, what was the match of the night? I guess the main event, people were saying, maybe the opener, some others were saying, but like there isn't that one thing that I'm like desperate to go back and rewatch this morning or a couple weeks from now?
Yeah. So, Money in the Bank was more B's and C's. Just looked it up.
Yeah.
16% A's on that one.
Yeah. And I think I gave that a D. I really hated that show, but I think in retrospect, I just hate Money in the Bank. So that played a
part.
This show, to what Justin was just saying, it had the spectacle about it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Looked like a big show. There were celebrities involved. The way it was shot looked nice.
The crowd was super invested in it, which it seems like it's been quite a while to see a really invested WWE crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things like you enjoy it so much in the moment. Like Kyle says, is there anything that you would go back and rewatch ever? I mean, to me, that's what makes a great show. I try to keep that in the back of my mind when I'm going to grade something an A. Like, is there anything a year or two down the road that I'm going to want to rewind and watch again? But the crowd clearly had fun. I liked that it was 8 matches. You know, a lot of people are maybe going over the top with the Triple H love here. Like, oh, his first show, you know, pay-per-view show that he's in charge of. Look at all these fun returns and stuff, as we're going to talk about. But as you talked about with Liam Friday on Top Rope Nation Extra, Kyle, I mean, that was kind of the hallmark of Triple H when he was in charge of NXT at the beginning of the war with AEW, was that like hotshot booking where nothing ever really came of any of these big surprising moments.
Yeah.
You know, so we'll see long term how that plays out. There's no way to evaluate that right now, but certainly there was some stuff that made headlines during the show.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I mean, outside of the opener, like not the match, but like the post-match, I'm going to push back on this narrative. Triple H's fingerprints, you know, oh my God. He's like, to me, this was a pretty standard WWE show where, again, he just didn't have anything that was flagrantly bad on it, which I guess, again, is just, you know, improvement for the sake of improvement.
Yeah. All right, let's get into it. Let's look at this match by match. Go ahead, Kyle. Sorry to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
So again, they're in Nashville. They're at the Nissan Stadium, although Jimmy Smith welcomed us to the Nissan Arena. So we were off to a great start there from the top of the show. But they did open with Becky Lynch and Bianca, as I said, and I very much enjoyed this. Obviously, it was an improvement over what we saw last year at SummerSlam between the two, and the quick finish with Becky's surprise return. What did you guys think? Let me just throw it around the horn before I go through like some of the big spots and moves. Justin, did you enjoy this one?
Yeah, I would say from what I saw online, I may have enjoyed it a little bit more than a lot of people. It was not as good as the WrestleMania match. I thought the last third of it was pretty excellent. The right woman won. There was multiple KOD spots, which I thought were really good. Becky reversed one, which in my notes I wrote down burning hammer because I forgot what Bianca Belair called her finisher, but she hit the one on the outside where Becky kind of reversed it and pulled her into the barrier. I thought that would have been a pretty sweet, just normal KOD spot, but it definitely seemed like the story of the match there for a while was Becky kind of just trying to stay alive by reversing everything. There was the reversal of the top rope leg drop attempt, which she turned into the power bomb, which I thought was pretty great. Something that irritates me that Ryan Huffman on the thread also pointed out is when these wrestlers act like they are dead on the outside during a count out moment, and then when it hits nine, they just pop up and jump in the ring. Is one of my biggest wrestling pet peeves.
It's one of those things that somebody did it really well the first time, and then it got over, and WWE was like, all right, we're going to repeat that spot all the time. And most people don't execute as well as whoever did it the first time.
Yeah. And then, so outside of that, I thought the finish was pretty incredible with Bianca reversing the kind of the middle rope rock bottom attempt or whatever the hell Becky is calling that maneuver, with the Spanish fly and then the KOD for the win.
Yeah, it was awesome. Kyle?
Not the match is okay. Pretty average, to be honest with you. It was nowhere near WrestleMania. I mean, WrestleMania was like a 4+ star match. This was like 2.5, I thought. I mean, it was just a very average professional wrestling match between these two. But the most important thing is who won, and I think also important, more important than the match itself, whether it was good or not, is what happened afterwards. So we'll get to that, I'm sure, in a moment.
Yeah. I took a lot of notes. I can take you through the hits by hits if you want, or we can just move on. But it was, I mean, like you said, you compare this to what happened last year at SummerSlam. I mean, Jimmy Smith, the announcer, he hit that over your head at the beginning. This is not last year, he said, as Becky was struggling to get an advantage on Bianca early on in the match. And then, you know, it went into this segment where Becky was working on Bianca's arm, swinging it against the mat, working her left arm over. They fought to the outside. Becky used the barricade on Bianca's arm. She had a leg drop to Bianca's neck off the barricade. We got the back exploder back in the ring to continue hurting the shoulder of Belair. At one point, Bianca tried to counter the back exploder and do a suplex, but Becky reversed it into a small package. I got lots of notes. Let me just go down to the finish. So in the end, Becky escaped the KOD in the ring. She charged and then she charged but gets thrown to the mat. Belair goes up top. Becky drops her and fights to the top turnbuckle with her. Becky gets pushed off, but holds Bianca's hair. She pulls her down. She hits the manhandle slam for the two count. Becky goes for the disarmer, but Bianca rolls her up for two. Then this is where, as Justin said, they fought up to the second rope, and Bianca hit the Spanish fly and then follows with the KOD for the three count. At the end, you know, it's like Becky may be shifting her character here a little bit because she extended her hand. They shook hands. They hugged in the ring. Bianca's celebrating, and then Bayley's theme song comes on. She's been gone over a year with that torn ACL. Out walks Bayley, got a good response from the live crowd. She comes down to the ring, you know, or about halfway down to the ring at this point, saying, "You remember me? Do you remember me?" And then Dakota Kai's theme song comes on. Remember, Dakota had been released by WWE, but she was someone that Triple H liked very much. And apparently there was some shock when she got released, and everyone thought he would make a good play to bring her back once he took power, which he did. I was reading up and hearing some things on this morning. Apparently AEW did kind of contact her, but there wasn't much discussion there, that there were some people in AEW that wanted her to come in, but it never really got off the ground at all. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, she comes out next, and then Io Shirai's theme song comes on. So Smith calls her Io Shirai, and then Corey Graves immediately calls her Io Sky. One of those stupid instances where they're going to rename someone when they come up from NXT to the main roster for whatever reason. So she's now Io Sky, even though her Titantron still said Io Shirai.
And Jimmy Smith didn't get the internal memo.
Yeah, he kept calling her Io Shirai while Graves kept calling her Io Sky.
I like Jimmy Smith more than Michael Cole, simply because he just comes across, you know, maybe he makes some mistakes, but he's newer at it. Obviously, Cole's been doing it 20 more years, but he just comes across as less of a tool.
Doesn't scream as much. Yeah.
And just doesn't look like a tool. He looks like I don't know, Michael Cole, when it, like all of his mannerisms, like if you saw him at like a bar or something, and he's talking about going up Nashville, you just like look at him like, this guy's a fucking toolbox.
Oh, man.
Sorry, not sorry.
So these three, this was actually pitched a while ago, and Vince apparently nixed it, that these three would be a main roster stable. So, and then it was pitched with various members after that, like Raquel Gonzalez as a member for a while. That was nixed as well. But this is the original group that was apparently pitched over a year ago that Vince said no on. So they are doing the stable now. They come down to the ring. Becky comes up to Bianca's side. They have this face off. Becky says, "We're ready to go. Come on." And the three Bailey's group leave and walk off.
This was the only thing on the show to me that felt like Triple H.
Yeah. And it totally was. I mean, these are his people. These are his women. You know, these are some of his favorites from the NXT days. So, yeah, the crowd popped big for this. We'll see where it goes. Hard to judge this off of one night. And obviously a travel in crowd like SummerSlam, they're going to go nuts for these returns. And they did. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I like stables, although it did seem the crowd didn't know Dakota Kai or Io Sky that much. There was a reaction, but it wasn't like, it was clearly lesser than Bailey's, which just reinforces, yep, you know, what we all know, yeah, that, you know, not everyone watches NXT. Interesting kind of to sort of monitor the respective brand rosters moving forward, because this was originally supposed to be, or was it last month? I've lost track. It was last month was originally supposed to be Bianca and Rhea, right? And then they had to scrap it because Rhea was hurt. Yeah, because that's, mm-hmm, what's-her-face got the shot, Carmella. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know if Rhea's kind of been moved out of the picture for now, because clearly, I mean, they're teasing something between Bianca and Bailey's group. But I expect to see some shuffles when we get to the draft in, what is that, early October? And we've only got one premium live event between then and now. So Becky's definitely going babyface. And I expect she'll be then put on the same brand as Ronda, which I assume will be SmackDown after the draft, because we'll get to Ronda later. But it did that was the other thing, perhaps, mm-hmm, Triple H's fingerprints, the positioning face heel dynamic of Becky Lynch and Ronda Rousey moving forward.
Yeah. I was going to say, to your point about the pops, that, yeah, Dakota got the least of the pops for sure. Bailey, I thought they reacted pretty well to Io when her theme came on. Like, they knew that that bass part of her theme right away as that kicked on. But
she's someone that should have been weird. Yeah. Too, like, to be like, I wish that she was like, oh, like
she was excited. Like,
fun. Yeah.
Big smile. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. She, like, Bianca reacted like a fan to this, which was kind of interesting. But
I hate when they do that, to be honest. No offense to her. She's very,
I didn't really like
she's
that.
She's lovely.
Especially if kayfabe, it's like, what happened to her last year when somebody made a surprise appearance? Why would she be happy to see this again?
Exactly. Yes.
But
yeah. And I mean, Io should have been on the main roster a long time ago, so it's good to see her up there.
And Meltzer and others had reported she had one foot out the door. you know, you talk about Dakota Kai being released. So, I mean, these were two people, you know, one was gone. One apparently had one, quote, one foot out the door. So, yeah, Triple H talked them into staying. And obviously, how are you going to get them to stay? You're going to say, we'll put you on the main roster. What do you think about putting those three together in a stable?
It sounds like, you know, the backstage part of it, it seems like it's pretty natural. Bailey had talked about how she became pretty close to Dakota Kai. Talking to each other a lot about their injuries and whatnot. So I think that automatically will help a faction if there is some, just some natural connective tissue there.
Yeah.
Do we assume that Io Shirai is put in a group so Bailey can talk for her? I mean, that's something Vince
McMahon. It's not a bad idea.
Something Vince McMahon would clearly think.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad idea. Look what they did to, remember when they made Nakamura talk, like right when they brought him up, and they made him do these, not long, but good length promos. They're like, why are they making this guy talk? You know, they don't need to do that. So I think that's a strength. I'm glad they would do that. But yeah, apparently she's re-signed. No confirmation on that, but I would assume she's re-signed, you know, doing this. So, and obviously Dakota Kai has. So the first match was produced by TJ Wilson, by the way. No surprise on that one. All right, so let's move into Logan Paul taking on The Miz. And I'm going to ask you guys this right off the top. Who do you think's the better, quote-unquote, celebrity wrestler, Logan Paul or Pat McAfee?
Oh, Logan Paul, I think, by a mile.
Logan Paul's...
At least, facing it solely on this show, most certainly Logan Paul.
Well, there was all kinds of issues through this show with the ring ropes, which hurt Pat McAfee. Like, he stumbled and he slipped, and they talked about like the humidity and it being slippery, but the ropes were clearly too loose because the Mysterio struggled with it too. Even Ray stumbled on the ropes. So McAfee, I agree with you. I think Logan Paul's better, but McAfee had a lot of botches in his match. We'll get to that.
Well, people love Pat McAfee. I mean, I think the only thing that the WWE audience inexplicably loves more than Pat McAfee is tables. But with Logan Paul, I mean, look, I absolutely question the idea of him being a babyface. I just don't think he's someone anyone would naturally root for.
Correct.
If you root for Logan Paul, that's a you problem.
He kind of won him over in this match, though, especially the frog splash.
Because his moves, and you can do that, but I just think his personality. I mean, you remember, he's not going to be doing frog splashes through a which was very impressive through a table every week. He's going to talk, and you're going to see his personality. And he is just not a personality that really any right-minded person should like. Now, that said, I think he has shown a tremendous aptitude for professional wrestling in his two matches, especially here. I mean, what's crazy is he never was lost, and he was able to work pretty slow and, like, make everything look good. And, I mean, he's got to... You know, it's well put together.
Yeah.
He's got a better diet than I do, obviously. So, you know.
Sweats like a world champ.
Yes. I mean.
He was breathing hard on this one. Yeah.
I mean, dude, if you wanted to get away with it, you guys are going to probably think I'm fucking nuts for saying this. You could do like a throwaway premium live event, main event with him and Roman. And people would probably be interested in it. Mm-hmm. Especially because, I mean, he's the kind of guy that I wouldn't care, you know, if he is going to be a babyface that you beat. To Roman, if you want to serve him up there.
Yeah. So in this match, the story early on was like The Miz was kind of toying with him a little bit, just doing his goofy facials.
That wasn't the story I was following in this match.
I was just about to say something.
The dogs were out for a walk, Kyle.
The dogs were out for a walk.
Yeah. Of course, Maryse and Ciampa out there at ringside with The Miz. But eventually... Logan Paul gets the advantage.
Yes, they were. I was missing a Bobby Heenan. Look at them.
Oh, God bless her. So you do this Irish whip spot where Logan Paul hit a couple of leapfrogs. This looked very orchestrated. He drops down into the splits.
I'm going to be forced out like Vince. Keep it up.
Fight to the outside. Paul hits a moonsault off the ring apron to the outside, which was nice. Miz went on offense for a little while, but then Logan Paul came back. He had a blockbuster. He put a figure four on, which got a big pop from the crowd. Obviously, Flair wrestling his last match tonight.
I was going to ask, is he still alive or how's he doing
on Fight
today?
TV. Yeah. Paul hits a crossbody off the top and then a standing moonsault for a two count. Then Ciampa gets kicked out, but he refuses to leave. He like puts down a chair. He's going to sit at ringside. Then AJ Styles' theme song comes on. AJ runs through the crowd. He attacks Ciampa. Then Paul hits a phenomenal forearm for a two count. He takes Miz out to the outside. He puts him on the announce table. And as I said before, Logan Paul hits this crazy frog splash. He jumped so far on this. That announce table was a long way from the ring. Through the announce table, he nails it. Mm-hmm. It looked great. Yeah. He takes the Miz back into the ring, covers him. Maurice distracts him. Imagine that. Then Logan Paul and Maurice are arguing, standing at the ring ropes. Miz tries to attack Logan with a chain, but Paul moves.
No, wasn't it that stupid Pokemon card or whatever? Or is it Pokemon?
I don't even know what it was.
I don't get involved in those things.
I don't know. He tried to attack him with something, but Logan Paul moves. He almost hits Maurice. Paul then hits the skull-crushing finale for the pinfall. That was the story of the match. I don't remember. I wrote chain, but I don't know what it was. Was it connected to a chain or something?
I don't know. I was kind of whatever. To be honest,
It was like that one of one card that he wore out. Wasn't it like on a necklace or something?
Yeah. I kind of missed the intros this match. I said goodnight to the kid, but AJ Styles, I'm going to expose myself a little bit here, is not a diehard regular WWE TV watcher. What is he doing right now? Is he done with Judgment Day? I saw he'd like teamed up with Dolph Ziggler, which sounds really absolutely dire in 2022. And now he's doing something with Miz. He's all over the place.
Yeah. I'm looking up his last two matches.
He is firmly entrenching himself in that mid card,
which to be
as a mid carder.
Yeah. I mean, it's 6 years. Jake Roberts rules in effect with him. I mean, what are you going to do with AJ Styles? I mean, he's been both a babyface and a heel. So his spot in the pecking order, I'm not, and we always talk about how like he hasn't had a great feud in a while anyway, so
he has been working Miz on the house shows circuit lately, so getting ready for that. But yeah, nothing of note, that's for sure.
Because I expected, like, because I thought Dom was gonna turn when we get to the next match, and we might get something like Edge, Ray, and AJ against the Judgment Day.
Yeah, but
apparently maybe not.
All right, let's move on. Bobby Lashley defending the U.S. title against your boy A-Town Theory, Kyle Ross.
Dude, A-Town.
I know when you heard that theme song come on, you were rocking.
That's real bad, man.
I could just see you rocking, 6 years deep in your basement, just grooving to that theme song.
I was feeling pretty good, by the way, when this show started.
That's why I said that. He texted us in the afternoon. You're something to the effect of, this is how you get ready for a WWE premium live event.
And they would listen to this who's in the Cleveland area. I was at Ale Fest all afternoon, man. Ooh, I was feeling real good.
Nice. Yeah, this one, very quick. Not a long match. Theory attacked Lashley with the briefcase before the bell. Then they start the match. Theory with some left hands. Lashley goes on offense. Theory tries to leave and go to the back. Lashley cuts him off by the ramp, tosses him into the guardrails. They go back into the ring. Theory hits a rolling drop kick. They exchange hands again. Lashley hits a power slam. Theory dodges a spear. Lashley hits the ring post. Then Theory goes to the outside. He rolls through the ropes, ends up getting pressed high in the air, brought down to the ring apron again, and then Bobby Lashley locks in the hurt lock for the finish. Very quick. So to that effect, Kyle, maybe you're happy that Theory lost in 4 minutes and 42 seconds. What did you think of the match?
Well, first of all, I believe we may have, did we talk about the maximum male models segment?
I didn't write down anything on that. Yeah. Okay. I actually fast-forwarded through that, to be honest with you.
It looks like those guys are into it, so I'll give them that. That's the most important thing when you've got a questionable gimmick, I guess. If you're really into it, maybe you can will it over. We shall
Didn't
see.
Didn't someone in the Facebook group joke that you were the next member of that group?
They did. I'm too good-looking.
I think I saw that.
That's what I said. I'd put myself on the level of a Rick Martel as a work, too. So it's so interesting. You know, they tell you how Austin Theory is the youngest this, the youngest that. He's the future. Man, he didn't really come across as a big deal in this at all. I mean, Bob Lashley is the clear star of this match. I mean, this just in, this guy's well put together.
Yeah.
I mean, this was, he just kind of smoked him, really. And that was it. And it's so funny. And it's good. I hope this is a trope that Triple H gets rid of completely, because we saw way too much of it. There's been a lot of talk on social media the last week or so about, like, you know, Austin Theory's like lost every time since he's gotten the briefcase. He's been beaten up by all the top guys on TV recently. And having everyone having watched WWE for the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years, what does that mean usually? Oh, well, he's going to like come in through the back door and cash in. And that's like such a crappy way to build a guy up as a champion, okay, as a heel. So I'm really glad they didn't have him cash in tonight. I know we'll get to that, but yeah, this was probably not even as good as their match last month. It was really to the point. I mean, it just made it clear that Bob Lashley is, you know, a top guy in this promotion, and Austin Theory really isn't.
This was the point in the night where my notes took an absolute nosedive and crashed into Mount Boredom. So if you don't have any great thoughts of your own, steal somebody else's. At Tape Machines, tape.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
Lashley Theory was a Big Boss Man Mountie SummerSlam match, except no one goes to jail, although someone maybe should.
Didn't Michael Cole reference that match during the show at some point?
Yeah, for Happy Corbin, because Corbin stole the Boss Man slide in and out thing. Yeah.
Yep.
But that's funny. A good one. Yeah. You can do your own research on Theory if you want to get that joke fully.
Yeah. So yeah, pretty much domination.
Yeah, clean, is it full Nelson? I mean, well, what do you do with Lashley now? Because I don't think they're putting him in with Reigns. They're certainly not doing it for Clash. I mean, and
got a couple months to kill.
Yeah, I assume you build him up for like Survivor Series or the Royal Rumble or something.
Yeah, because Reigns probably didn't they add Extreme Rules to the premium live event schedule? If I missed that, I think I saw that. I should say not. I missed it. I think they did, and I can see that being one that Reigns doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's probably Extreme Rules. It doesn't work for me, brother. I'm an extreme. I can see him just telling, you know, Trips, hey, I'm an extreme doesn't rules. Okay, I'm going home, be there, buddy. Yeah, doesn't work for me. So yeah, what do you do with? He was politicking for a match with Gunther. I saw in a recent interview. That's a Survivor Series deal because they're the two. You know, the two secondary champ, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think he should even be in competitive matches. Just dominating people for a while here. Do the Hurt Lock challenge or something.
It'll get him over. I mean,
yeah.
Owens, do you think they're gonna have Owens work with them?
Mm-hmm.
That's somebody who's like not doing anything, and he's high enough. But yeah, I could see that being a natural fit. We have Carlo. He said that about Meltzer reporting that.
Okay. Yeah, he will not be working Extreme Rules for sure, as expected. All right. No disqualification. The Mysterios, Rey, fresh off his 20th anniversary celebration. I know you guys tuned in for that. Taking on the Judgment Day, Finn Balor, Damian Priest. Justin, let me ask you, because I don't know if we've talked about this since this group start. What do you think of Finn Balor now in this group? As our resident Finn Balor fan,
I think the entire thing stinks. I don't like it at all. Also, I would just say that Finn might want to take a playbook out of, you know, from Ric Flair, and he needs to maybe cover up those skinny calves he's got there. But no, I don't like it. He was desperately in need of a character change, but this wasn't it.
No, like,
I mean, there's no character to it. They just, I don't know. What is the Judgment?
They have like spooky effects, and it's like, yeah, it makes no sense. Like they're like
Rhea Ripley laughs. That's about
it's one of those deals where Edge was like, you know, kind of trying to, it felt the original incarnation with Edge is he was like trying to grab some people who were hungry and they were going to back him up. And I mean, that stunk too, but at least it made sense. But to your point, like it feels with Edge out of the group now, they've got a certain ceiling.
Yeah.
Even with Triple H. I know Balor had some interesting remarks in an interview he gave a couple days ago or something. He was talking about how he hopes he has more input. And what did you guys think? Because you guys both like Finn Balor. I think maybe you're a little higher on him than I am. I mentioned this on Facebook. Ryan, I know you were running around with the birthday, but Justin, I think you saw this. Am I crazy for thinking that like Finn Balor is like a heartthrob type character, like a heel heart, is way better than this spooky business? I mean, the guy's got a hot wife. I think he also didn't date Kathy Kelly too. I mean, this guy's you know, does pretty well for himself on Friday and Saturday night.
He should be like a Ravishing Rick Rude type. I believe I noted that he needs to come up with a submission finisher called the Thirst Trap.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That's perfect.
Yeah. Like about like our John always like leather jacket wearing shades, you know. I don't know. Cool people wear shades, especially when they do podcasts.
I was just thinking, God damn it, I wish I had some sunglasses down here because I'm the odd man out. You guys are both wearing sunglasses. Now, I was curious, though, because I thought maybe you guys would be a little higher on the group since Edge wasn't in it now because, you know, we talked about the meandering promos that he did and how it wasn't working out.
Now there's just no promos.
But, yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree with you. That would be a much better character for Finn.
And it still feels like an Edge's group because they still come out to that Alter Bridge theme, which just absolutely feels 100% like Edge.
Right.
Not them.
100%. Yeah. You think Bray may come back soon to go with the group? Clay in the chat checking in.
People are really big on this. I don't know.
I mean, clearly, I don't think AEW is interested. So if he's going to wrestle, it's going to be WWE.
I think it all depends on what form he comes back in.
Right. Yeah. As I mentioned a little bit ago, this match was a little sloppy. Ray, who's always outstanding, you know, I'm watching this match with my kids this morning. And I'm talking about, you know, how you guys I need to show you the match with Eddie Guerrero from Halloween Havoc all these years ago. And I was telling him how Ray's been wrestling since I was a little kid and he still wrestles like he's in his 20s or 30s. But in this match, he was slipping up because, as I said, the ring ropes appear to be too loose. And Dominic, bless his heart, He's just not good. He's too slow. I mean, this was not a good match.
Whenever they do a spot involving him in the turnbuckle, it is always very business exposing. Like he runs into, you know, there's the expression, oh, he went to that turnbuckle 100 miles an hour. Dom tends to go to that turnbuckle about 2 miles an hour. It's very bad.
Was this like the safest or most like rule following anything goes match that is ever.
I was so good to say that too. This is a no DQ match and
no DQ, but make sure you hold on to the tag rope.
Absolutely, and, I mean, do not get in that ring.
I mean, the only reason it was no DQ is so they could do the Edge return and have him help the baby faces, right? The baby faces who apparently did their wardrobe shopping at Hogan's Clearwater Beach Shop with all the red and yellow they had. My God,
yeah. Yeah, so not a great match. Take you through it here a little bit. The Mysterios were on offense first. Dominic hit a suicide dive to the outside, like through Ray's legs, and then Ray hit the springboard moonsault to the outside. But eventually, Finn goes on offense against Dominic, then Priest, then Balor again. They're working over Dominic. Crowd didn't really care too much. I put in my notes, quote, hot tag back to Ray. He gets in there with Damian Priest. Ray hit most of his signature offense at this point. Then they finally bring in a chair to hammer home that no DQ aspect, I guess. Priest hit a super kick to turn the tide. Balor makes a blind tag when Ray was going for the 619. He hits a flying clothesline, which looked really good on Ray. Balor goes for the coup de grace. Dominic attacks him until Ray climbs up to the top rope. And then Ray hit a top rope hurricanrana to Balor for a two count as Priest made the save. At this point, finally, everyone realizes it's no DQ and the match breaks down and everybody jumps in there. The Mysterios go for a double 619, but Rhea Ripley from the outside grabs their legs. Ripley takes out Dominic. Ray then gets the Sound of Heaven chokeslam from Priest. Balor wants a chair and the lights go out. And then Edge comes out to like a remixed version of the Brood theme song, it sounded like to me. And he's even kind of got the look that he initially had when he came up to WWF. Like he's got the sunglasses on. He has this red coat on. just overall just felt like a throwback to his original look with the theme song and everything. I got to hear it again, but the theme was pretty, I always liked the Brood theme. The remix sounded pretty solid. No, Alter Bridge. Sorry, Tim Jensen. He takes out Priest in the aisle with a spear, and then he spears Balor in the ring. The Mysterios then win after a double 619, and then Ray goes for like this slingshot over the top rope, loses his balance, hits the splash that was almost botched, and he gets the three count anyways. So the Mysterios are victorious.
I'm a little confounded by this whole Edge thing. I mean, for one, all he's doing is just playing the greatest hits with all his returns. Going back to the Brood after, didn't we just see that last year at SummerSlam, the big Brood entrance?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the weird thing is like, I thought the rumor was he wanted out of the Judgment because he didn't want to do the spooky stuff. And since he got kicked out, I don't believe they have done any spooky Halloween stuff. But then here comes Edge back with the Brood entrance,
right,
and doing all that stuff.
Michael Jenkinson checking in the chat. It's just boring.
And, you know, you talk about playing the greatest hits. You know, what's he probably going with now, at least on TV for the next couple weeks? Him and Ray, who were a great babyface team, but they were a great babyface team 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
SmackDown 6. We're going to be celebrating 20-year anniversary of that.
Well, I'm glad that he said no to the spooky stuff. I'm glad he said no to the spooky stuff. We'll see where this goes. I like the entrance. I like the look, but I don't know how this is going to play out. We'll see. Definitely his return has gone downhill since that awesome return at the Royal Rumble. He's been trying to find himself, trying to do something a little fresh with the old spin on it. Is, you know, it feels like he's trying to bring the old gimmicks 20 years ahead, but still kind of do the same thing. I don't know. We'll see. He wants that nostalgia pop, but he also wants to do something fresh, like we saw with Judgment Day, which did not work out.
I just don't know if it works. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like we talked about how on a previous show, how he wants to, I think, show the audience that might not like WWE as much, you know, that, hey, I can, you know, do these cool things in, you know, within the WWE framework, and he's trying, but it ain't really working. I haven't really liked anything I just done for some time.
It seems like, you know, the rumor was he was going to be coming back as the R-rated superstar, and now it looks more like Brood Edge. Although I think he's just like he's taken all these leftover ingredients from his past successful runs, and now he's just kind of throwing them into one pot and hoping people like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As I said, this match was not that good. This is pretty weak stuff at this. Like to this point, this was the weakest match on the show.
But I think it was positioned as such, right? Like coming in, you thought this was kind of the lowest match on the card. Are you guys surprised that Dom didn't turn? I mean, obviously it would have made no sense with Edge. The big thing they wanted was Edge coming back. But again, this is kind of the WWE we've just come to know over the last several years. They had even given interviews, both Ray and Dom, where they're like, we'll never feud and stuff like that. And I think there's a lot of real, they don't want to do a feud is some stuff that I've heard. But with them both being so public about that, again, I thought that was like, oh, well, he's going to turn now because they're saying that.
Publicly, right.
But well, guess not.
I would be willing to bet that, you know, Ray gets to watch Dom work all the time. And he's like, I'm not fucking feuding with that dude. Am I supposed to get, I'm supposed to get a match out of that?
Yeah.
Kidding me?
He's like, I'll just take the 5-minute breather every once in a while when we're out there rather than having to drag my freaking son's ass to a good match.
Yeah. We'll see. But I mean, when Ray wraps it up, I don't think Dominic's time for this promotion is very long.
Do you see them doing intergender? Because we talked about earlier, what's Rhea's short term? Like, you've got Edge, Ray, and Dom, and you've got the Judgment Day. I mean, do you see, like, I mean, I wouldn't mind, you know, I don't really like intergender stuff, but I wouldn't mind seeing Rhea beat Dom, to be honest with you. It would get her over.
Yeah, true. Oh, poor Dom.
Yeah, so, something else we should say, just because it's fresh on the mind right now, and there's just, you could say it at any point. Another positive for this show, we talked about maybe the sum being greater than the individual parts. Everyone did kind of feel, at least to the live crowd, like a star.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even like in this match, which was clearly the lowest positioned match on the show, the crowd was reacting and looked at them as, you know, most of them is pretty important in almost every instance.
Yeah. Agreed. I mean, like, the live crowd loved almost everything on this show, regardless. It was a great crowd. So they lied a little bit on how many people were there, which we'll get to here in a little bit. They had the perfect guy out there to lie about it, but we'll save that. Stay tuned. Yeah. Stay tuned. Yeah.
Some things never change.
Yes. Pat McAfee, Baron Corbin. Pretty sloppy match. You know, out of McAfee's work with WWE in the ring, easily the worst. But, you know, he saved a lot of the spots. There was some stuff where it could have gone really bad, and him being a professional athlete, like, he had the balance to kind of make it work anyways. But yeah, this was not good. Early on, McAfee nearly fell off the top rope, but he caught himself and he did a senton to the outside. I've said this numerous times, but it was clearly the ropes were not tight enough and everyone was getting up there and they were wobbling a little bit. On the finish of the match with his destroyer out of the corner, he lost his balance, but he carried through and hit it anyways. You guys have any thoughts on the match itself before we get into the aftermath?
Not the match, but I will say this is an all-time downgrade of entrance music for somebody with Pat McAfee going from Seven Nation Army to whatever that corny knockoff was, where they're like, they actually like put the ooze or the, you know, the words up on his Titan trying to try and get the crowd to sing along with it.
Yeah.
And I also didn't like that opening with the choir, with them trying to get the crowd to chant. What was it? Something like Corbin's a dumbass, or I thought that was incredibly
dumbass lame. Corbin. But
yeah. Same thing with like the tiny balls thing with Miz. I'm just never going to be a fan of that kind of pandering to the crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they got plenty of time. They got a little over 10 minutes, but...
Too much, I think.
I would agree.
Would anyone have been upset if McAfee would have beat him real quick? I mean, at this point, I mean, who's rooting for Happy Corbin?
Pretty bad, man. Pretty bad stuff. So, McAfee wins, as we said. After the match, McAfee goes over and he taunts Corey Graves as Michael Cole is just screaming into the camera how excited he is that his broadcast partner was victorious here. McAfee then goes over and he chugs a beer, 2/3 full, probably beer, very, very quickly. Maybe the most impressive thing that we saw out of Pat McAfee during this whole segment. And that was it. I mean, so the crowd, again, the crowd was into him. The match was very bad, very sloppy. But they were happy, so that's all that matters.
Yeah. A couple quick things. I think we talked about this on our SmackDown watch-along. Miz and Corbin being in these spots to put over Logan Paul and Pat McAfee were probably the right calls, because like, no one, like, who cares about either guy of those guys losing at this point? I mean, the Miz and Corbin, like I just said about Corbin, they could lose until the end of time. And also, this was the match, wasn't it, where Graves said to Cole, "I liked you better when you didn't have opinions." And Cole's like, "Well, things are changed. A lot's changed around here." That was kind of humorous, I suppose.
All right. After this, they bring out Drew McIntyre. McIntyre, of course, you mentioned the watch along. Get in our Facebook discussion group. We always post the links. I also tweet them out about 3 times per month. We do these watch alongs over on the Playback app. A lot of fun. You can literally watch the wrestling show on our stream as we go. So we were streaming SmackDown on Friday night. We saw McIntyre and Sheamus have a pretty fun match. They got about a half hour on SmackDown. So they bring out McIntyre now. He talks about that match in front of the crowd. There was a kid in the front row. He got the crowd to chant his name. And then he talks about how he loves Nashville so much. It's his new home. He builds up his match at Clash at the Castle, whether that was going to be Brock or Roman Reigns. And then he says, quote, Now let me raise my magic sword and see what happens.
Jesus Christ.
Take that a couple of ways. The pyro goes off in the stadium, and there's Drew McIntyre's appearance on SummerSlam for you.
There are a lot of people, maybe not a lot, maybe I'm overstating it, but there are some people I've already seen on social media who think, oh, we've got Triple H in charge now. He's not going to beat the big home country baby face at Clash at the Castle. Oh, what a great statement it would be for Triple H if he had McIntyre getting his hand raised at Clash at the Castle and he beats Roman. I don't think for a second that's going to happen. Your thoughts?
I would be shocked. I don't think so either. Justin?
I'm just kind of in flux as to, I mean, we'll probably talk more about it in the main event, but I just don't know where they go now. I mean, we're going to get an entire late summer, fall, early winter of Roman Reigns as champion? I mean,
he only needs.
You will acknowledge him, Justin.
Yeah, he only probably
the next couple of weeks.
He's probably got two title defenses between now and the end of the year. Clash of the Castle and Survivor Series. And, you know, a lot of people bemoan that, but I think it's working for them. The audience views Roman. It makes Roman actually feel like a big deal when he does work. It's like, oh, my God. It's like one of the 10 times Roman Reigns is going to wrestle this year. And you might think it sounds silly, and it completely exposes, you know, the rationale we were given for the brands. But, oh, each show must have its own champion. You can't have, you know, a brand without a world title match every month. Well, this seems to tell me the opposite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I joked about you're going to be acknowledging him for the next couple of weeks because he's probably going to take some time off, don't you think? I mean, there's no reason to have him on TV every week. We've seen this before the summer. Like, I think he'll probably vanish for a little while. I'm sure he'll be on there this week to talk about the Brock match, maybe next week. But then I wouldn't be surprised if he's gone for a few weeks. We'll see.
I mean, what do we have here? 4 or so weeks between now and Clash of the Castle. So he's got 5, 12, 19, 26. I mean, to build up that match, he'll probably be on most of those shows. But it's certainly after Clash of the Castle, I see him going back to Florida and hanging out with the fam.
Yeah, what is that? 4 weeks of television? 4 or 5? Yeah, after that, he's got to be probably gone. Maybe until they ramp up for Survivor Series. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it just for like, if he's going to be gone for that amount of time, like you're looking at Bobby Lashley as kind of the baby face of your promotion. I mean, once we're assuming Roman Reigns beats McIntyre at Clash of the Castle.
It will be interesting because Cody's hurt and Cody was able to carry, you know, the Hell in a Cell show when Roman wasn't there, but it does beg the question, Justin, what are you going to headline Extreme Rules with? I mean, is it Brock going for revenge against something?
On a Riddle and Rollins?
That segment sucked last night. Are we at that part yet?
they're just going to get Dominic Mysterio out there and just someone's just going to beat the hell out of him for 20
I don't know. Maybe a celebrity. Who knows? Nick Khan will find some celebrity and put him out there. I don't know. It's Extreme Rules, so it's going to be some gimmicky match anyway.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on. Undisputed WWE Tag Team Title match. The Usos taking on the Street Profits with, for some reason, Jeff Jarrett out there as guest referee. This is just such a weird spot to put Jeff Jarrett. And, you know, the Money in the Bank match between these two, I was very high on, way higher on it than you were, Kyle. I really liked that match. This one, I was not high on at all. It was it was like a television match, maybe even below that. I didn't think this match was very good at all. It's very average. I shouldn't say very good. It was just very average.
Usos' heat segments are absolute death.
Yeah,
it's just like they do like a super kick and then they just walk around for what feels like an hour and then they just do something else and they walk around for what feels like an hour. It's just like, and you know, then the crowd, like there's a near fall and crowds like, whoa, yeah, okay. But like it went, and again, I kind of thought that like, the Money in the Bank match was better than this one for sure.
Yeah.
But I thought the Money in the Bank match was, you know, it just had more near falls than this that the crowd was invested in. This was just, I don't know. I feel that these two teams should have a much better match, much more fast paced. It should just be go, go, go. WWE doesn't do those kind of matches generally speaking. So I don't know if they're just handcuffed by what the people on top want them to do. It just, this was boring as sin.
It seemed like they just wanted to get to the ending.
Yeah.
They wanted to get to the tease of Montez Ford, you know, splitting with Dawkins.
Yeah.
And
even on Cage Match, I was going to say, it does not have a good score. And sometimes Cage Match is a little higher than we would be, but it's like a 6.5 right now and there.
That's still too high.
Yeah, but for Cage Match, that's low, I would say, on some of these WWE pay-per-views.
Sure. And Jarrett is the referee. I don't know. I actually liked what they did on SmackDown with the Usos accidentally super kicking him, because it creates the natural tension between the heels and the special guest referee. But they really didn't play into that at all. Mm-mm. In this match. There was like nothing. And then I think the big talking point, the question to come out of this match is, do you agree with them going to what appears to be an obvious Street Profits split over the Street Profits being the tag team champions? I think that's the question we need to answer.
It's weird because I'm just ready for that split. I'm ready for Montez Ford to get the big singles push. But that tag team division is in dire need of depth. I don't know who else the Usos freaking feud with now.
I think Cole was pushing your boys, the new vicious Viking Raiders, during the match, because he said, have you seen what they're doing on SmackDown? To Graves. But that's like a heel versus heel match. I don't know if they're just, I can see the argument internally for why you keep the Usos as the tag team champions. They're part of the biggest act in the promotion, the bloodline. Reigns is the unified world champion. They're going to be the unified tag team champions as a result. But, unless if you're just kind of waiting for Orton to get back and do RK-Bro and the Usos, to Justin's point, I don't know what you, if you're breaking up the Street Profits, I don't know what you're doing with this tag division of the interim until Orton gets back. And Orton, didn't they say, was a little more severe than originally thought? His injury?
Yeah.
Okay.
We kind of had this discussion when we talked about Montez, I think after Money in the Bank. And it's just like, I feel like they should go with him now. And I don't feel like their inept booking with the tag team division should be a reason to not do it, you keep them together to have more depth, but they've also as a team lost so much recently.
No, well, that's what I'm saying.
They don't even feel like they should be in the title picture anyways. No,
that's a great point. Now that they've lost, you almost have to split them. There's no point. Like, to me, if you're not going to split them, they should have won the championship. Now,
right,
there's something that needs to be discussed about Montez Ford's potential single. It kind of seemed that they were positioning him to be the heel.
In the split.
And I joked about that on my Money in the Bank recap. Like, no, in the WWE, they do something dumb like make Ford the heel. Well, people are just going to naturally want to cheer for him. I think the commentary's done a fairly good job, at portraying Angelo Dawkins as not being like chopped liver. They keep saying, everyone's talking about the spot to this board. Well, this Dawkins has been putting in the work too. And he has been putting in the work. And I think Dawkins has done a great job. I do worry for him as a single. I don't think he's going to go anywhere, but man, Montez Ford as a heel is a little head scratching, other than they don't know how to book baby faces. And if they want to push him to the moon, they're going to have him kick people's asses as a heel, I guess, is the thought process.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. He's a natural baby face, but it sure seems like, especially with that ending, that they're teasing him as the heel. But they have it right there with the natural storyline of Montez Ford is getting, all the shine, all the spotlight. You could just have Dawkins turn on him for that. Like, he's sick of him, stealing the spotlight.
Yeah, he's sick of hearing about this split. Why didn't you just go off on your own if you wanted it so much?
Yeah. Something in this match I wanted to make sure I got in. So as the match started, Michael Cole in commentary mentioned that the last time there was a guest referee was Jesse Ventura back in 1999. Yeah. And Corey Graves asks if Cole thinks he could be governor someday, that being Corey. And Cole says, no way. He has too many skeletons in his closet. He's even worse than JBL. And I just wrote in all caps, skeletons in their closet, because that means so much to United States voters these days.
Well, oh, so that's funny. It's funny you went that direction, because I noted the thing about Ventura in the Facebook group, and that's, it was weird how Cole said it. He said Jesse Ventura was like the last like major special referee we had at SummerSlam. And I just laughed. What in the world just happened to this chat? I know we got a big audience right now, but we have a guy going by the name of I Just Farted who announced to the group, I Just Farted, everyone.
Who is this man? Who's doing this run-in?
Okay, anyway, but, you know, Cole's talked about Jesse Ventura being like the last major special guest referee. And I was like, what a way for Paul and Stephanie to shit on Shane, man. Because Shane was a special guest referee at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
A lot. We had talked about at least for 2017. He's probably, but there's been lots of other special guest referees at SummerSlam since 1999. Right.
Yeah. I would have to look them all up. But yeah.
But, I mean,
did he say something about like just two special referees or something?
Yeah. And he's like,
well, I mean, I thought about Sean, obviously. But
yeah. Because Ventura did it twice, 88 and 99. I was very happy not to hear With My Baby Tonight. I don't like how that's got a cult following. I thought that was. Hopefully Paul and Stephanie putting Bruce in his place, because Bruce inexplicably thinks that song is cool. Of course, Bruce is a tool. Wanted to get that off my plate.
Yeah. All right, real quick, the match itself. They worked over Dawkins early. They cut the ring in half, you know, just your stereotypical tag team wrestling. Cole was on commentary wondering if the Usos are the greatest of all time. At the end, the story was that Ford hit his frog splash, but he kind of hesitated a bit on the cover because it hurt when he came down. And then he's pissed about the count. So he's yelling at Jeff Jarrett. Ford then went for a suicide dive to the outside, but he gets double super kicked. And then back in the ring, Dawkins gets super kicked and the 1D for the finish.
Yeah, kind of clean as a sheet. A couple things. At one point during this match, Michael Cole exclaimed, quote, "An awesome count by Jeff Jarrett." It was a very standard 2.5 count.
Yes.
Also, I joked on the Facebook page, tired, WWE shock face after kickout, wired, Montez Ford pissed face after kickout. He's the only guy who has a good facial reaction, you know, and over the top to those near falls, I feel,
yeah,
the promotion. But yeah, shocked about how the Street Profits went down like that. And you would have to think that they're going to split up.
Yeah, I don't know where else to go with them at this point after losing again. We'll see. Kyle, it was at this point that they showed your boy Kid Rock in the crowd.
Don't start with this. That is...
Wait a second. Is that... You know, that is not the woman, the comedian that was with Kid Rock.
That's not like Kyle funny. Ross in that picture. Is not funny at all, in my opinion.
That looks like... That's Kyle Ross doing a run-in with Kid Rock at SummerSlam. My God,
all
people.
Right. All right. I noticed you put your face on all the muscular people, and I get freaking... Who's this woman that I saw? Tammy?
Hey, man, I'm running this production. That's the price you pay.
Trailer Park Tammy or something like that?
That's the price you pay, my friend.
Trailer Park Tammy?
You guys are not watching the video stream. You are missing out right now. Kid Rock and her made out on camera. It was very disgusting. Kid Rock, all right, if it's only Kid Rock on this show, maybe you can handle it. But to get Glenn Jacobs later, both of them on the same show, come on. We'll get to that. Before we get there, Matt Riddle comes out, or Riddle, I should say, out of the crowd. Talks about how he's not medically cleared, but he calls out Seth Rollins anyway. There's officials everywhere.
Trailer Trash Tammy. Pardon me.
That's her name. Okay. Trailer Trash Kyle. I mean, Tammy.
Chelsea Lynn is her name, and she spells Chelsea the wrong way, too, probably because she doesn't even know how to spell her own name. This looks real bad. I'm sorry if somebody out there listening like likes this, and this is like their favorite comedian, but like, they say looks can be deceiving sometimes, but man, I'll tell you what, I don't think there's anything deceiving about this. This woman's act looks like absolute shit.
Yeah, it was not great. It was pretty disgusting, in fact. But yes, that was...
You might be a redneck if. That was a real shitty fucking routine, too, way back in the day. Fucking listen to something like this.
Let's get to this Riddle segment. All right, so Riddle comes out. He challenges Rollins. There's officials everywhere, but Rollins comes out anyways. They get into a brawl. They end up back in the ring brawling with all these officials. They fight up the aisle, as I said. And in the end, Riddle gets curb stomped. Rollins laughs and he walks off. So you still got these two on SummerSlam, just not the match that was initially advertised. Any thoughts on this?
Yeah, Seth Rollins is another freaking guy who I could go about 3 years without seeing. First of all, he was dressed like Pat Summitt, as noted by someone on Twitter. Okay. Secondly, like, dude, that thing where he, like, escaped the WWE officials and ran to the ring was embarrassing. It looked like he was the Keystone Cops and Yakety Sack should be playing. Furthermore, I would like someone, if they have the time, to find how many times in the history of the WWF from 1980 to 1999, a babyface would storm the ring, call out a heel, and then proceed to just get their ass kicked. How many times did that happen? I'm betting it's single digits.
Yeah.
Why would you do that? Like, the crowd was fired up when they saw Riddle, like, legit, right? Yeah. Like, they were like, at first, I think they thought it was a fan.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh shit, that's Matt Riddle. They were real fired up that he calls out Rollins. People are like, yeah, I'm feeling it. Then Rollins is just like this geeky run and kicks his ass. Why would you do that?
You're telling me that this promotion doesn't know how to book baby faces, Kyle?
No.
Because that's a perfect segue into our next match.
Yeah, this I actually thought that was like one of the worst parts of the show, that Riddle. Rollins. But I don't think they needed to do it. Maybe less interested in their feud.
Yeah. All right. SmackDown Women's title. Liv Morgan defending against Ronda Rousey. Now, I read reports this morning that said the match had time cut due to the tag going too long. Apparently, the tag match went too long, which it went less time than Money in the Bank. Second biggest pay-per-view of the year, but apparently went overtime. So this one got just 4 minutes and 34 seconds. And as I said, just a hell of a way to book a babyface with the finish of this match. Let's get to it. So as the match starts, Ronda locks in an armbar and she yells out the crowd, "You want some Liv, huh? You want a piece of her tonight? Yeah, you do." As the crowd cheers. Of course they do. So the ref wants to stop the match eventually because Liv's arm is hurt. Liv denies it. She wants to fight on with one arm. Ronda locks in an armbar. But her shoulders are on the mat, so the ref counts three as Liv Morgan, the babyface, is tapping out. Keep in mind, the build to this match was Ronda basically saying, well, she was saying, Liv Morgan has no place in the ring with her. Let's face it, you're Liv Morgan. And we get that in the finish where Ronda just kicks her ass, has her beat, but Ronda gets counted down because her shoulders are on the mat, even though Liv was tapping out. So it makes, you know, the referee look dumb.
Second premium live event in a row. We had to finish because the Usos, Street Profits, the last show.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Just a terrible finish on a premium live event. Terrible way for a babyface to win. Weak as hell. Liv retains because the official is dumb. Afterwards, Ronda goes nuts, puts her in the armbar again as Liv is tapping yet again. Ronda then puts the referee in an armbar, and Michael Cole on commentary talking about how Ronda dominated the match, and Graves says, yes, Ronda should be the champion. That's the heel.
Yeah. Well, all right. So, okay. We're convinced that this was a heel turn by Ronda. Cause it's interesting. That was like that was the old Ken Shamrock thing though. Remember it got him over more as a baby face when he'd like beat up refs. But I think just if you kind of are, you know, putting your finger in the wind, Ronda should be a heel. And based on the fact that it looked earlier in the night that they're turning Becky babyface, you can see maybe the wheels in motion for that particular match one-on-one at WrestleMania. And that brings me to Liv. Liv is just a placeholder.
Yep.
She is like, I mean, like, I don't expect her to necessarily be in a top spot by the time Mania is around. It's just someone that they're, you know, maybe Ronda's taking some time off this fall as well. Yeah. I don't know if they're going to do a suspension angle because of her attacking the Raps or if it's just, you know, the impetus to get her heel right away. But Ron is clearly going to beat Liv at some point. And I wonder if this could have been something else Triple H may have changed. Maybe Triple H was like, hey, you know, we're going to get a lot. It will put heat on the promotion if we have Liv tap out or just lose the belt right away. Let's come up with something, even if it's dumb, to lengthen her run and... this chat, whenever I'm talking, the good chats coming, the good comments coming. But like, you know, and they're lengthen her run, I guess. I think that's maybe all the people want is Liv to get, you know, a run where it's, oh, she had a run, and then people are like, yeah, okay, this isn't that great, and they're ready to go back to, you know, what in their mind is bigger things.
It's kind of like the Kofi Kingston title reign.
Yeah,
they give him a long run, but it's pretty obvious that the way they see him is not as a big time main eventer.
Yeah,
right.
Still laughing almost every week since it's been said that Top Rope Nation extra did with Rick Skelton when he commented on Kofi Mania and claimed it seemed the point of that was just to let everyone know Vince was a racist without explicitly stating it. Oh, maybe God. My favorite comment on Top Rotation of any guest this year.
Yeah. Rick was great on that. Yeah.
Yeah. That was one of the most incredible breakdowns of Kofi Mania I've ever heard.
Trailer trash, Tammy.
All right. This is when they brought out Mayor Kane to announce a worked attendance number of 48,449. If you follow WrestleTix or Brian Alvarez, about a 10,000, around a 10,000 number increase above what they really drew, which was around 38,000 for this show. But I'm sure it's not the first time Mr. Glenn Jacobs has denied reality or said something that was factually inaccurate. So perfect guy to announce this. Yes.
Also very interesting. Usually, you know, he's inflating numbers here. Usually he's downplaying them.
Yes. Very true. Very true. So,
look, man,
I know they were in Tennessee. But, dude, anyone who cheered this dumbass should be tarred and feathered, Kyle.
I agree.
I'm sorry. I got to go.
I like to hear that kind of talk from you. A nice, level headed boy from Iowa.
I cannot stand anymore, Glenn Jacobs. This guy is such a freaking tool and so dumb. The only way he could possibly get elected to office is in an area like where he is, where his party, he's a libertarian, has a like plus 25 partisan lean or something like that. If this guy was in a competitive district, he would get wiped off the ballot. This guy is a freaking moron. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't like his bald head either.
It's Glenn Jacobs. Get him off my screen. But unfortunately, some of the tool bags in the audience cheered this guy.
It's what's on the head, what's in the head. It's all very bad. He stinks.
Not a lot in the head of that guy. Not a lot. I would love to get on a live stream and debate politics with that guy. How many years have we heard that Glenn Jacobs is so smart?
Oh, that's just,
what a this guy is not smart. I guarantee you I could wipe him off the mat in a political debate.
I mean, it really makes you wonder like how dumb most of the rest of the locker room is, that this guy was regarded as the smartest guy in the locker room. Of course, smartest guy in a WWE locker room is probably means read three books once, is what I'm guessing. I would metaphorically
choke slam this guy. Yeah,
what is the more preposterous statement from back in the day, that Kane is the smartest guy in the WWE locker room, or that Linda McMahon is like the benevolent, nice McMahon, or such a benevolent, like not even a man, Linda said, like Jim Ross would say that. Remember all that, you know, Linda, she's a saint. Oh, she's so great.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, man, when they caught her talking about Vince, that sounded like a woman who wasn't, you know, she was talking about her husband at the time, I think.
It ain't good. It ain't good, Kyle. It ain't good. All right.
I'm going to repeat my joke. Over under 2.5 number of times Vince and Linda had sex.
Oh, that's good. All right. Let's get to the main event. Brock and Roman Reigns, yet again. This time, last man standing match. So they add a new wrinkle to it, at least. Brock Lesnar comes out for his entrance. By the way, he came out second. Roman came out first. Entrance took an eternity. Out comes Brock Lesnar. He stops after he comes out of the entranceway, and he walks over to the side where they've got some shitty piece of machinery masquerading as a tractor that he drives to the ring. Everyone knows, unless it's green and yellow, it's not a real tractor, but some piece of shit red tractor Brock Lesnar drives to the ring. Wow. And Brock is introduced from the front loader on the tractor. He stands up there, and he insists on introducing himself. He does so. They introduce Roman, and then Brock jumps off the tractor during the intros to get the jump on Roman Reigns.
Roman caught the microphone. Like, yes. It was kind of cool, actually. Like, yeah. There's video of this on Twitter when, like, Lesnar threw the mic out and Reigns just caught it real calmly. That was actually kind of cool.
It almost looked CGI'd or something. The way he caught it was so smooth.
It's almost like a Mr. Perfect redo.
Yeah. Right. And Brock can talk, by the way. It's so funny that, like, there was, you know, like, it just makes you wonder, like, did they waste a lot of prime years of him just, you know, dancing like he had to go to the bathroom behind Heyman? Because he was pretty good on the mic, 03 as a heel on SmackDown. I know that I'm asking people to recall things from 19 years ago, but when he was by himself as a heel in that year, I remember him being pretty good on the mic.
It's funny, he definitely channeled Heyman the way he introduced himself. He did the Barack Lesnar, just like Heyman would. So like as they get into this at the beginning, like I said, he jumps Roman and he hits a belly to belly off the steps on the outside. They fight up near the lighting rigs. Brock got thrown into the rigs and very clearly missed his face. Wasn't close. He was being very careful. But then when he went to attack Roman, not so careful, picks up Roman, slams him hard against the lighting rig. I gotta think that was pretty.
Oh, yeah.
That was bad. And it happened right after Brock was like so careful with himself and just clearly missed his face on the leg ring. And then he picks up Roman and he just slams him like crazy into this big steel piece. And then they fight back to the ring. Roman goes on offense. Samoan drop through a table, then another through a table, a Superman punch, but Brock is just down to one knee. Can't keep him down. Another Superman punch and a spear. Still, Brock comes back. He tosses Roman through a broken piece of the table on the outside. Brock then hits him with a piece of the table. Roman answers the count. Roman's put into the front loader of the tractor and tossed into the ring.
There was one spot I just wanted to bring up because I think it's already happened at this point. When they got back to ringside, Brock tried jumping up, like doing like a box jump onto the railing, and he didn't make it. He kind of slipped. I thought it was funny that no one in the crowd attempted a "you fucked up" chant because they probably scared to death. I think that Brock would kick their head. Like, it's funny. Like, you know, it shows the respect Brock kind of has because, like, he looked pissed about that too. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but no, there wasn't no "you fucked up" chant to him.
Yeah. Curtis mentioned in the chat, don't be bad mouthing that tractor. Case IH is the official tractor of the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. I'm sorry, Curtis. Nothing runs like a deer.
Yeah,
I gotta ask Curtis,
and I hope I don't embarrass myself here. Rough Riders, that's one word and not two, apparently. I've struggled. I've seen it different places on different websites. I always never know which way to write with the Rough Riders. So I'm going to go with Curtis, and it's one. I learned something today.
How did, the Rough Riders? You're talking about the Rough Raiders. Well, how did Teddy Roosevelt spell it, Kyle?
I don't know. I look kind of cool on that picture. I looked old when I was sitting on your couch, but there, I look kind of cool, man.
What a segue.
Taming that beast.
Thank you, Curtis, for setting that up and teeing it up nicely for me.
You know, you talk about the CFL. I had a nice winner last night with the Blue Bombers beating the Stampeders. There ain't no in Manitoba this year.
We are getting way off track now. Okay, so Roman was put into the front loader, tossed into the ring. There's Brock hitting several German suplexes at this point. Roman beats the count. There's an F5. Roman beats the count. Roman counters an F5 into the guillotine choke. Brock reverses that into one of his own, although Michael Cole called it a Kimura, and Corey Graves had to correct him. Roman beats the count after it looked like he was choked into unconsciousness.
Vince would have let him know it was a Kimura.
Yeah. I was thinking that throughout the show, like how relieved they must be to not have Vince screaming in their ears throughout the show. At this point, this is when Brock went to the outside and he used the tractor. First, he rammed the ring and the ring moved a couple of feet. Then he used the tractor to lift the ring up. And as he lifts the corner of the ring up, Roman rolls to the outside. I mean, this is like the one screenshot, of course, you're going to see forever. I mean, just a spectacle to see that ring. Yeah. And then it stayed that way for the rest of the show. But I mean, I don't know, 15 feet in the air or something like that. It's crazy.
So Reigns taking the bump out of the front loader, I thought was kind of weak. I have a note on that Facebook, but he was this was visually a great bump of him rolling out of the ring. He took that. You're right. That's going to be in a lot of video packages moving forward.
So, I mean, that's the memorable spot from the show that people will remember for years, for sure, is the tractor spot.
Sorry, Curtis answered my CFL question there. Because, yes, there are two rough, there are, but the odd was the red blacks, correct? Never mind.
Oh, man. All right. So, at this point, where are we in my notes? Yeah, so, he lifts the ring up. Roman rolls to the outside. Then the Usos come out. They attack Brock. Brock fights them off. Heyman grabs the belts. He's like handing them to Brock. He's begging him to stop. He says Roman's his meal ticket. Brock gives Heyman an F5 through the commentary table, which was another spectacle, I guess you could say. Crowd popped big for that.
And finally they did it. It had been a that had been something we were wondering if they were going to do at Mania, that spot. I'll tell you what, other than trailer trash Tammy or whoever, I don't know if there was anybody in that building who was going to get up any less for that F5 than Heyman. A big guy, man. I like Paul, though.
Reigns then hits Lesnar with a spear. Both men beat the count before collapsing. And then your boy Theory's music hits A-Town, Kyle.
A-town
he runs
down.
To ringside, A-Town down, runs to ringside, drops Reigns with the briefcase before trying to cash in the Money in the Bank contract. Did you guys notice? I mean, they're shooting this from behind, but like as he hit Reigns, Reigns really snapped back against that ringside barrier. It looked like it hurt. Just the way he hit the barrier, like his neck or something.
This was clearly the most compelling part of the match. We'll probably talk about that in a little bit, but maybe they were just kind of like a little on edge because the freaking ring was like up in the air, like you said. But Reigns took a couple nasty looking bumps, it seemed, during there. And the Usos did too. There was like, it seemed like they were trying to be careful, but like, you know, one of the Usos took a nasty overhead belly to belly from Reigns, or pardon me, from Lesnar during this sequence.
Yeah, and you mentioned the tractor spot and everything. I was convinced watching this live that the tractor was going to play into the finish, because I was thinking, like, how are they going to beat Brock again? Because I thought Roman was going to win, and I thought they might like redo the Rock Foley halftime heat match with the forklift or something and have him like pinned under the track or something like that. I could totally see him going back to that again.
Yeah, it's Chad Repack's favorite finish.
There you are, Chad. There's your mention. So let's see. Yeah, so then, like I said, Theory drops Reigns with the briefcase. Lesnar hits Theory with an F5 before Theory could cash it in. And then the Usos come in. They both super kick Lesnar. That looked pretty brutal. Lesnar beats the count after a spear from Reigns. Reigns then used Theory's briefcase to attack Lesnar. Lesnar again beats the count. So Reigns hits him with the WWE Championship belt. Lesnar again beats the count. Reigns then used the Universal title belt to hit Lesnar. Then Reigns and the Usos bury Lesnar under basically all the wrecked debris from the announce table from around the ring. They piled it all on top of Brock, and then Roman stands on top of all of this as the referee counts to 10. Now, I thought the rules in one of these matches was when the referee counts, you have to stay back. But as the referee was counting, they continue to pummel Brock and like stack all this stuff on top. Whatever. In the end, Roman is successful, he wins, and it was quite the spectacle. Not like a great wrestling match, but memorable, so I would rate it like fairly good for that. But didn't cover, you guys wanted to talk about,
there was a double super kick spot with the Usos that looked pretty nasty on Brock. Like, it looked like they timed it too well, like they might have, like, you know, got the, and Brock looked like he was a little loopy there. Look, the well of Brock and Roman is pretty dry. I think we would all agree, right? You know, we've seen this a lot. But they obviously had to do something creative if they're going to do this again. And the tractor was novel. You know, if my view was obstructed by it, I've been pretty pissed. I think if I was in the live crowd, that there was a camera shot that if you were, you know, out by the entrances and maybe sitting up, that the tractor, when it was up, it was obstructing your view. And I don't know, once the ring was raised, what that was doing to some of those ringside people, but whatever. Sometimes you do stuff. I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting. You know, as a TV viewer, my view wasn't obstructed. I was on the couch. I could still see the TV plain as day. But getting back to the well is dry thing, and I mentioned this on Facebook, the one thing I will say about when it's Lesnar challenging Reigns is you actually do believe there is a chance Reigns could lose. And they had the theory bit mixed in. And so normally when I'm watching a Roman Reigns match, I'm just like, dude, that he's not going to lose. He has no chance of losing. But with Lesnar, you're always like, eh, maybe they might do something. But look, the original plan was Reigns and Orton. And Orton wasn't going to win for sure.
Yeesh.
So this was probably better, I guess. That has made it certainly more memorable. I don't know what that, because if it's Reigns and Orton, it would have been just the usual Reigns match with a flat finish, right? This, I was into it for the last 10 minutes. I think the opening 15 was kind of boring, personally. But here's a question I got for you guys. So Reigns did his acknowledge me bit before the match. God, was that entrance long.
Mm-hmm.
And especially on a show that was already in its fourth hour.
Yeah.
Too. Mm-hmm. But do you think if, let's say they're doing Reigns and Rock at Mania, there's going to be a substantial part of the crowd that's cheering Roman Reigns in that match, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because there already is. I mean, that whole acknowledge me thing, I mean, I guess it's supposed to, but it gets a babyface ring just because how unbeatable he's booked. I mean, it's only natural that people are just going to cheer him.
I think it'll be pretty 50-50. But there'll be a lot of people cheering him, yeah.
Yeah, but
people are going to be pumped to see Rock back wrestling.
Absolutely, but it's not going to be like 100-0. I mean, I think...
No. Yeah.
And we were talking about this, Justin, earlier in the show, might have been during Becky Bianca, that modern WWE, it's not so much about face-heel alive anymore. It's just about getting two big names in and letting the crowd cheer for who the fuck they want to cheer for. It seems.
Yeah, we've talked about it before as far as where they're going to go for WrestleMania. And I believe Ryan's with me here that I would love to see Roman Reigns versus The Rock at WrestleMania. I think that is a main event, obviously, but I don't think it needs to be for the title. I think somebody else needs to be the one to get the rub, the shine from beating Roman Reigns. And that's honestly part of the reason why I enjoyed this match so much was that I was very invested in Brock and Theory for that matter, not winning. Cause I just think that would have been a waste from, you know, what you've been building for 2 years here with Roman Reigns. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Lesnar got the undefeated streak from Undertaker. He doesn't need this. This time they have got to give it to somebody who can use it for years to come. And just real quick, I want to say the Tractor Gaga stuff was really fun. The only lame spot was when Brock dumped Roman into the ring just because the tractor wasn't up high enough. I think it could have been effective if it was higher up.
Yeah.
Sorry, just a little side note there.
No. And I agree with that. But he kind of made up for it when he rolled out, I think. So if it's not a – I mean, it's interesting when you are looking way into the future and our crystal balls with, like, Mania. Because if Roman's still the unified champion – that means he will defend against the Rumble winner at WrestleMania, right?
Yeah.
Unless if they break protocol. And I mean, if it's Rock, then Rock's got to win the Rumble too, right?
Ugh.
That's something else to consider. I mean, I know a lot of people think that, and I know it's on the tip of your tongue, Justin, and I assume it's on the tip of your tongue as well too, Ryan, but like Cody coming back and winning the Rumble is clearly a great story that they've got in front of them. And you don't want to, you certainly don't want to have him come back for the Rumble and like lose.
Mm-mm. Right.
That would be bad. So, I mean, that's interesting. And with not many Reigns title offenses between now and the Rumble, people are going to think I'm crazy. And consider the source here. I think WWE's fine with this world title situation. They probably actually have more than enough options, believe it or not. If you only have to fill two world title matches between now and the Rumble, and you got this Cody thing and Rock, and you know they're going to do Rock. If they get Rock, they're doing Rock, obviously. Mm-hmm. Whether or not it's for the title, I don't know. I think there's an argument to have it for the title, and there's an argument not to have it for the title. But yeah, I don't know. I think they've got actually enough options to fill that out.
So would you have Roman lose the title before Mania? Have him and Rock be non-title, Cody win the title at Mania against somebody completely different, and then you save Cody Roman for like next summer?
Can I jump in real quick? I would say You can still have Cody come back, win the Rumble, say he's not going to wait for WrestleMania, challenge Roman Reigns at whatever PLE is in between the Rumble and WrestleMania. You have Rock cost the title for Roman Reigns to Cody, and then that, you know, I don't know what you do with Cody at WrestleMania.
Yeah, that's the only problem. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because part of me thought that they might split the titles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in my head, like when they were, no, like, I don't think they should, but I could see the argument to do it in the sense that you could then serve all the masters we're talking about. You could still have, Roman and Rock be a title match, and then Cody would win the Rumble and challenge whomever else. Like, Cody beating Brock for the title would not have been a terrible idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that is key though. If Roman's working Rock, who does Cody work at Mania?
You know,
I don't
the thing
to see Seth Rollins again, please, dear God, no.
I mean, there's no way we see The Rock winning the world title, right? Cause I just,
No.
Yeah. Okay. I just, at his age and you know, how much he works and how valuable he is in Hollywood, I can't see him doing more than just one match.
And to your earlier point that you made, Justin, very astutely about why Brock shouldn't have won here, I think that goes like double, triple for Rock. I mean, the mm-hmm. last person who should end Roman Reigns' long title run is Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah.
Like the absolute last.
Right.
I mean, maybe Trailer Park Tammy would be lower than him on the list.
But. We shall see. All right. Well, I mean, that was SummerSlam 2022. I want to get this up on the podcast feed, so anyone who's not joining us on the video can hear this. But if you are listening on the podcast feed, please be sure to check out the YouTube channel, subscribe, join us for one of these live casts. You're missing all these great face swap photos I've been putting up and all the welcoming we did for Kyle as he returned to the flagship.
That was
today.
Very nice. Trailer Park Tammy well, stinks though.
Well, I got to say, Kyle, I mean, it was nice to have Madcap Ross back on Top Rope Nation. So,
oh, see, there you go. Now, see, that is actually what my physique looks like, to be honest with you.
Madcap Ross, my friend. Very nice. Good to have you back, buddy. It was fun to see you on your way back to Ohio when you stopped here
in Iowa.
So.
We didn't really promote that in the Facebook group. I mentioned it when I was with Liam that I'd stopped by. That was very nice to do.
We did. We all hung out. Tim was here too. Tim's in the chat. I cropped Tim out of this picture because I didn't know if he'd want to be on YouTube or not. So, but yeah, we had a good time. It's a good time for the families to all hang out and everything. And good to get back here in the regular rotation on the flagship. We got a draft
girls,
coming up. What's that?
Our girls, there was like a Survivor Series team we had to like watch over there, man. It was crazy.
Yeah, my girls and yours, they really got along. Had a good time. So what do we have planned in the coming weeks? Well, this week we're dropping Canadian Stampede 97 for patrons. There'll be a teaser on our main feed as well.
What night are we?
And then either
that,
the week
the
after or the week after that, I can't remember. We got a draft. We're going to do a fantasy draft. It's been a long time since we've done one of those draft shows. They're always popular. We're going to let the patrons vote on the draft topic. So we'll be doing one of those here in a couple of weeks. So we got some fun stuff on the horizon. Yeah.
Seriously, what night are we recording Canadian Stampede?
It seems like a great
either tomorrow or Tuesday. We got to decide. Yeah. It's coming out this
tomorrow.
Week.
Tomorrow. Oh, I can't do Wednesday. That's right. I'm going to be freaking shit canned again. What a life I live. Freaking hammered all the time.
That's why he's wearing the sunglasses. Gotta hide that hangover. All right, guys, I hope you enjoyed the show. Join the Facebook group. Talk with us each and every day over there. Just search Top Rope Nation Pro Wrestling Discussion. Join the conversation. Never miss a live show here on YouTube. Subscribe on the podcast feeds. And as I said, if you want more bonus content, you can find us over on patreon.com/toprope nation. So for Justin Joint and Kyle Ross, I am Ryan Drosty. This has been episode 262, Top Rope Nation. Have a great week. We'll see everyone next time. Take care.
Trailer Park Tammy.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Ready for a career in behavioral health? Earn your online degree at Herzing University. Choose from health and human services, psychology, or social work programs. Gain the skills to work, coordinate, and manage nonprofits. Secure a bachelor's in psychology to study mental health or advance your social work career through our online Masters of Social Work. Let us help you become a social change agent. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Text HEALTH to 85109. That's HEALTH to 85109. Or visit herzing.edu.